This is Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America. I'm your host, Gary Holt, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Tina Mae Weber. Good morning, Tina Mae.
Good chilly morning to you, Gary.
Good chilly morning. Well, tell us what the temperature is up in Missouri today.
Well, this morning when I woke up, it was 9 degrees, and now it's around 22.
Oh, my gracious. My gracious. It sounds like we're having a heat wave down here in Tennessee with 28 degrees just outside of Nashville. But the sun is shining, and it's a beautiful day, and we've got some great guests on the show today. So tell us who we're going to be talking with.
Absolutely. Today we have Susanna Gibson, founder and publisher of the Trailblazer magazine. Then we travel to Del Rio, Tennessee, and talk with Sean Gannon, owner of French Broad Outpost Ranch.
Well, Susanna is not a guest anymore. She's just part of the family. So
she's kind of a regular.
Yeah, every third Tuesday of the month, I get excited thinking about talking with Susanna. So we're going to have a fun show talking with her and a lot of interesting conversation coming up. A really unique place up in East Tennessee in the Great Smoky Mountains we'll be visiting. So it's going to be a fun show. And I want to take just a minute and remind folks that they can go to equestrianlegacy.net, download our new mobile app, and right now people are using that in about five different countries: Switzerland, Sweden, Germany, the United Kingdom, Canada, and of course all across the United States. So visit the website, download the mobile app, it's free, and you can listen to Equestrian Legacy Radio on the go around the world. The Saddle Up America show today is made possible by our great sponsors at the General Store, where you'll find everything for the horse lover and folks that love the equestrian lifestyle. So grab a cup of coffee. When we come back, we'll be talking with Susanna Gibson. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you'd drop in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just like
my
ice.
Mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, watch your
my father
hands.
Will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace.
So really, I'd better.
Darling, please don't hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink
put
more.
Put some music on while I pour.
The neighbors might think,
baby, it's bad out there.
Hey, what is this drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight now. I'll take your hat, your hair looks swell.
No,
mind
sir.
If I move up?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't stay. Baby, it's cold outside. I simply must go.
Now, baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is no.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This welcome has been
lucky that you
so
dropped
nice
in. Look out the window at that
my
storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will
like
be there at the door.
Sure.
My maiden aunt's mind.
Gosh, your lips are delicious.
Well, maybe just a half a drink more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to go home.
Baby, you'll freeze out there.
Hey, lend me your coat.
It's up to your knees out there.
You've really been grand.
I thrill when you touch
but
my hand.
Don't you see?
How can you do this thing to
it's
me?
Tomorrow.
I'll think of my lifelong
at
sorrow.
At least there will be plenty in plans.
If you caught pneumonia and
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
cold outside, and I know, Susanna, you're thinking, what are you talking about out there in sunny California? Your temperatures are what today?
Oh, wow. We have 75-degree high and 55-degree low. I think I'm going to give my dog a bath today because she doesn't like my cold.
Goodness.
Oh, yeah. Well, watering the lawn and the roses, and it's pretty fine in Central California. Of course, we have earthquakes and fires and
mudslides, but yeah, and wineries. That's a good thing.
You know, every state has its ups and downs, and but it's pretty spectacular. I find I had lived here for the first 40 years of my life, and then I moved away, and I've just have come back for a while to live. And what really struck me is I'm walking down the streets, and the trees are all in full color, just gorgeous fall color. And then right alongside it are beds of full bloom rose bushes.
Oh, wow.
You know, I know.
Wow.
I've tried to get pictures, but it just doesn't do it justice. So it's, and in Central California, we don't have smog yet. So it's a special little place to nestle down to. If you want to drive to the beach, it's about a 20-minute drive, and
Well, as I sit here with my cup of coffee in my hand, trying to stay warm, I'm just really jealous. But I was listening to the news forecast this morning, and they were talking about the fact in all 50 states, there's at least one area that is below freezing today. And so we're kind of experiencing some early cold back through most of the country. So everybody that's listening is really envious of you today.
But, you know, a couple of years ago, one of my best friends for over 30 years was Linda Tollington-Jones, and we were trying to figure out a time where we could meet because we had a project we were working on. And we went, you know, this week, and then it got down to the week of Christmas. And I said, oh, well, Christmas week. She goes, well, what are you doing? I said, you know, really nothing this year. And she goes, well, why don't you fly over and have Christmas? And she lives in Hawaii.
Right.
And I said, but you know what? I didn't like it. I didn't like being in Hawaii at Christmas. It was just not real because it was so darn warm. And, you know, people were in their Hawaiian shirts and baggy shorts, you know, on Christmas Day. Just, I don't know, it's supposed to be cold on Christmas.
It's supposed to be cold, yeah. But, you know, they have snow up in Hawaii, too, and they do in the mountains. So there are some cold spots out in the state of Hawaii as well as what we're used to with the beaches and the beautiful weather out there. But we've got quite a few things that we want to talk about. You know, we're getting close to the holidays. Thanksgiving is just over a week away, and that's unbelievable. And then Christmas is almost here, and people kind of make some adjustments for their riding. And we had talked a little bit about what we'd like to discuss today on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And endurance riding is something that's near and dear to your heart, isn't it?
It is. It truly is. I always wanted horses my whole life, but all I did was go to the library and read every Black Stallion book there was and played with horses and never got my own horse until I was 28 years old. And I met a girl that did endurance horse racing, and she was retiring a 16-year-old Arabian gelding and said, you know, kind of like the Grand Canyon story of me, oh, hey, that sounds fun, let's do that. You know, I have a brain and sometimes I don't. So I started training with her, and I remember the funny part for me was that she worked, well, we both worked during the day, so the only time we could train the horses was at night. So I'd drive out to her ranch, we'd have a couple beers and get on the horses, and we would ride for 1 to 2 hours in the dead of night through pretty choppy trails, and that really gave me courage to trust the horse and be able to go. But that was kind of the beginning of it. And I did endurance riding all the way up to, I guess I retired from it about 15 years ago as far as full competition.
Mm-hmm.
But I competed for over 20 years. It's really an amazing sport. It looks easy. I mean, people, well, a lot of times most people, including myself, said, oh, I could never do that. I could never do that. But, you know how you eat an elephant?
Yeah, one bite at a time. That's right.
And you need a mentor. You need somebody to really show you the ropes. But all you're really trying to do is you have to learn about the mechanical, metabolic, and mental aspects of the horse. And you have to keep all of them, all those plates twirling so that the horse is happy. And so that he can get to the course, you know, without being pulled by the veterinarians. And to keep them happy, they have to be sound. They have to be well fed. Their feet can't hurt. The saddle can't hurt their back. The rider's equitation needs to be good. They have to eat. They have to drink. And when you really get that involved with your animal over a period of 8 hours, or if it's 100 miles or even 24 hours, you just learn a real depth of knowledge about a horse that you translate into everyday use of your horse. You can glance over and just see a body posture, body language that you've learned that says, ooh, he's not feeling too good, or he's a little sore on a, you know, right rear leg or something like that. So the knowledge that I got from that was really amazing, and I brought it to Trailblazer Magazine along with my editor-in-chief, Bobby Jo Weber, still competes in endurance riding, and she's in her 60s. She and her husband. In fact, her husband came in top 10, won best condition a couple weeks ago. They were just ecstatic. So they're still going at it. I can't quite handle it.
Well, let me ask a couple of questions. You know, for listeners that may not be familiar with endurance riding and endurance racing, most of the courses are going to be 50 and 100 miles, 50 or 100 miles, and they now have a limited distance course that's 25 miles.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not, you know, we're not going out for just a little hour ride out on the trail. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask you about was, first of all, if you decide to get involved in this sport, how do you go about selecting the horse that you want to use for that? And I know Bobby Jo and our friend Keith Keebler use walking horses, and theirs. The Arabian is, you know, has been the king of the sport forever. But how do you go about selecting the horse, and how do you go about preparing the horse and yourself to do 25, 50, or 100 miles?
Well, they have an initial rule that the horse has to be at least 5 years old. They've set up all the rules for the health of the horse. I'm so proud of the sport. And so, first of all, the horse has to be at least 5 years old, because that's how old for their bodies are truly adult.
Mature, right.
Mature, yeah, with their bones and all. I mean, they still grow. You don't want to put too many miles on them. Age, on the other end, there is no limit. There have been people that have ridden their horses in endurance and competitive riding, and we can talk about the difference, the horses up into their 30s. And so not only was the horse living in its 30s, but it was competing in the sport. And to compete in the sport means you've got to be sound. Your horse cannot have a gimp in his giddy-up.
Right.
And so choosing a horse, there's really more of a body type than a breed, and you look for that different body type in all breeds. I've raced quarter horses, Appaloosas, saddlebreds, Arabians, a lot of different breeds of horses, gated horses, Tennessee Walkers. But you just, you want a horse that wants to do it. That's, you know, the mindset is the most. And some horses don't. They don't want to work that hard. But the horses initially were built to cover long distances at a constant speed. That's what they're physiologically and mentally created to do when out in the wild, like most four-legged running animals, like antelope and like that. But when something comes along, they fight if they have to, but mostly it's they run. Even babies, a day old, their babies have to be able to get up and run. So that's built into their nature. So you'd have to have the right mind horse. You have to go out there and get a horse that's not, if he doesn't enjoy his job, he's not going to enjoy it. It doesn't mean they can't be a little lazy. I'd much prefer a horse that I can ride with the gas pedal instead of the brakes.
Right.
And the horses that you have to have to sit on the brake all the time, it's not a fun ride.
Well, it's an endurance race. It's not a speed race. I mean, it's not a, you know, you're not doing a quarter mile or a mile and a half. You're doing a lot of miles. So
you're doing a lot of miles. Yes, you are. So in selecting, most people, if you've got a horse that is sound, because they're checked by veterinarians when you get to the ride on Friday, they get a full exam, and then they're examined about every 15 to 20 miles during the ride, depending on how long it is. And then they have to pass a vet check at the finish line. So they get more health checks and really, you know, detailed health checks. But some horses do in their whole lifetime and check on their soundness, their, you know, for dehydration, their gut sounds. I mean, they really have a very strong checklist. And if your horse isn't up to snuff, you get excused from the competition. So it's very well monitored racing. So if you've got a horse and he's sound and he likes to go out and get out and he'll eat and drink while he's out there, you've got an endurance horse, a horse that can do it.
All right.
And that's really pretty much all you need. There's a limit, you know, of how many hours that it takes to do the 50. I think, well, I know the 100 is a 24-hour race. And, oh, boy, I've been out there close to 24 hours, and that's a long day.
I would think so.
I know some of the Valerie Kennedy, who's, I think, won the World Cup 3 or 4 times. They asked her why she always won, and she says because she hates riding in the dark. And so the only way to ride in the dark is to come in first.
Goodness. Well, there's as I was thinking about the show today, I had some questions that I was going to ask about riders and really what's going on when you're doing 100 miles. And out on the trail that long. I want to take a quick break. We're clipping right along as we always do with our time with you because you're just so much fun to talk to. But I want to take just a real quick break. I want to mention to folks that we have a really special show that's coming up on Thursday on the Campfire Cafe. And we're doing a special our show with Michael Martin Murphy, and we're going to be talking about his 21st Cowboy Christmas Ball, and we're going to talk about the history of the Cowboy Ball that began in Anson, Texas back in the 1800s. So that's coming up on Thursday, and we're going to take a listen to one of the songs that you'll hear on the show. And when we come back, Tina May, we kind of like to give things away, don't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so when we come back, we're going to talk about the Legacy Club real quick and announce a winner for this week. And you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, and this is Michael Martin Murphy's Christmas on the Line.
That old north wind howling high up in the timber, the only choir that I remember, I was riding on the line. One lone star hanging over the horizon. like the one that led the wise men as they followed heaven's sign. Snow-capped feet, like the angels in their glory, seem to sing the ancient story as the wind blows through the pines, drifting along to the sound of spurs jingling like silver bells ringing. Christmas on the line.
Tune in Thursday. It's going to be a fun show when we talk with Michael Martin Murphy. And Tina May, kind of looking like Christmas in Missouri, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's still white here. We have snow on the ground, and it's bitter cold to me.
Well, it's not California weather, that's for sure. Hey, listen, the Legacy Club is our thank you to our listeners. It's a free membership, and you can go and register and enroll in the Legacy Club at EquestrianLegacy.net. And we have great gifts that we give away every week, every month, and unbelievably, we're getting close to the time for our year-end drawing. And this month's drawing is a great gift from Elkins Creek Horse Camp and Tack Shop. And then our year-end drawing is for a great revolutionary two-horse watering system, portable system. Put it in your trailer, and you'll travel with that, and your horses can have their same water, and that's provided by Hydro Horse. So we'll be giving that away probably New Year's Eve, I guess. So if you haven't enrolled, be sure and do that. But this week, Tina May, we have a winner, and who is that, and what are they receiving?
Absolutely. We are giving away this week a breakaway halter from Foundation First Horsemanship, and our winner this week is Sammy Day of Tennessee. Congratulations, Sammy.
All right, Sammy Day of Tennessee gets a great breakaway halter from Foundation First Horsemanship, and we want to remind folks that if you're a Legacy Club member, you're automatically enrolled in our drawings, and you get great discounts from all the Legacy Club sponsors. So check them out on our website at EquestrianLegacy.net. And there's a question that I had early this morning, Susanna, about our riders, that when they're out on the trail and you're doing 100 miles and you're riding for 24 hours, first of all, how do you eat? And secondly, how do you go to the bathroom?
There have some people that have developed some unique procedures to try and do it faster. But when you go 100 miles over 24 hours, it's a long, slow day. I mean, you're trotting you know, trotting. The leaders are cantering and trotting the whole way. And then, you know, the rest of the people, even if you come in last, our motto is to finish is to win. And you get just as much applause and sometimes even more people standing at the finish line for the person in the back as you do for the person in the front. It's a beautiful sentiment, much like the Iditarod race. So you eat, you pack your lunch, you stop in the bushes if you have to, but they've got vet checks, veterinary examinations, about every 15 miles on trail for the horses, and they usually have outhouses there.
Okay.
So you tend to kind of plan it along the way, but I have had no qualms whatsoever about endurance horses learn to, you know, step off the trail and eat grass while I shoot towards the bathroom.
I just bet you don't have too many competitors where they're wearing their chinks or their chaps, do you?
Well, it depends on what kind of ride it is. If you're riding through really gnarly country, you wear the chaps the same reasons the cowboys do. You want to keep, you know, stickers and branches and different things like that from hitting you. But what's so cool about the sport is you can have a guy in chinks, full-on chaps, cowboy hat, big silver buckle on a quarter horse, right alongside a girl or a guy in lycra tights or bicycle shorts, tennis shoes, and a bicycle helmet on a little Arabian. And I've taken pictures of that juxtaposition many times in my life, and I love it because there's just no rules. Age-wise, people in their 80s have competed in endurance. You have to be at least 5 years old, but there have been, back in the day, I can remember a couple kids, 5, 6, 7 years old, winning races, riding with their family. But you just pack, you want to pack light because it is, in every extra pound, your horse is using more energy. So you want to always pack food for yourself. You know, you take care of the trail. If you know that there's going to be 3 or 4 hours before the next vet check in terms of being on the trail, you make sure that you have adequate food for yourself and your horse. If you're racing across Kentucky, you don't have to worry. It's all grass.
Right.
If you're racing across Utah or Nevada, there's no grass, and so you pack grain, you know, like a complete food. Terrain is one that I used to do. They have a complete food, and you put it in little Ziploc bags in 1 pound increments and, you know, kind of balance it around your saddle. And just to make sure the horse is the most important thing. And they eat first and we eat second.
Susanna, the trails, when the courses are laid out, of course, the two big ones, I guess, that almost everybody are familiar with would be the Tevis and the Old Dominion. But when these courses are laid out, I'm assuming that they are laid out so that there's an adequate water supply for the horses out on the trail.
Yes. There have been some really bad ride managers that didn't do that, didn't do their homework, and people and horses suffered from it. But they are set up to that's what's so cool about it is that you have a group of people, a club somewhere that says, hey, let's put on a ride. They set up the base camp area so that there's food and, you know, plenty of parking. They mark the trail. They make sure that you get water ever so often. I mean, I put on rides in California on the Army base, Fort 100 Liggett, and I had a great relationship with the colonel there. And I remember going out there for a meeting one time, and the head ranger at the lake where we stayed said, I'd like to come out with you because I never can get anywhere with them. They never let me on the 100 Lake part of the thing. And I said, okay, well, it's really not a big deal. And this is like, remember, 20 years ago. And so we walk into the thing, and I said, "Is Colonel so-and-so here?" And the guy goes, "Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I'll go get him." He comes out, and he goes, "Hey there, good-looking. How you doing?" And Mike looks over up and goes, "Aw, jeez." But they used to haul water trucks, you know, water buffaloes up to the top of the mountain. They used it as part of training, radios and stuff. But that's what you do when you go on these rides. People, the ride managers make sure that there's water. If it's not natural water, they bring in water buffaloes, they haul water. There's a lot of work involved because ultimately the horse, the horse can make 50 miles or 25 miles without food. He's not going to do, you know, feel real good. He's going to be hungry, but you've got to get water. They sweat so much, and they need water. So that is one of the criteria. And of course, when you come to the water, you learn how to, people actually take Clorox bottles and kind of cut them in a groove and tie them on the side of their saddle. And when you get to the water, you scoop it out and you put it on your horse to cool them off.
Right.
If you're in a river or a lake, you can do a sponge. You get really good at dropping your sponge down. And, you can do it in water trough, but you drop it down, you squeeze it over your horse, you drop it down. I mean, it's fun to watch how methodical and, you know, you don't leave until your horse is cared for, but how quickly you do it, because every time you mess up and you take two or three extra minutes, you're two or three extra minutes behind the people in front if you're going to win, and that's hard to make that time up.
Well, and it's important, again, to remember that not only is it a timed event, but also the condition of the horse has to be is important. And even horses that don't come across the line first, sometimes are awarded best condition horse too, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah, they are. They have to be. The sport of endurance really, really puts in no drugs of any kind. I mean, you can't even feed yucca. It has to be absolutely pure. Well, if you've got racing, and I'm real familiar with track racing and the drug usage there. If you've got an event where you've got a horse and you can't use drugs to enhance them or cover anything up, there's only one other way you're going to get through it, and that's with good horsemanship. You have to keep your horse sound, and that takes a lot to keep a horse. Think about yourself, Gary. How would you feel going out there and walking 50 miles? Would you be sound at the end?
No, I wouldn't be sound after a mile and a half. I mean, I'm just... You know, it's just kind of tough on these old guys. You know, we could spend a whole show talking about how much time goes into the conditioning of the horse, preparing for these different races, as well as the rider, because the rider has to be in great shape too to spend that many hours in the saddle. So we're going to have to follow back up on this, but I've got to find out what's going on with Trailblazer Magazine.
As always, the issue that came out was our best ever. It was a special edition. It is a special edition. In fact, it rolls off the presses today or tomorrow. And it's a special hoof edition. And as always, working with Bobby, we put together, we find different people that nobody knows about but who are brilliant and write, you know, really good information, fresh information that the horse owner can use. That's our goal, is to teach the horse owner how to take care of their own horses and how to know whether a farrier is doing the right thing. We do lean toward barefoot or the poly shoes, the plastic shoes, because they flex, the flex shoes. Mm-hmm. And that's the ones that most endurance riders use. Some of them use steel shoes just because they have to. All horses can't go barefoot.
Right.
And so you have to, so that in this issue, I'm so proud of it. Almost as much as any issue I've ever done, because it goes into the real care of a hoof, how to notice if things are wrong, what you want to look for in the angle of the hoof, so that the owner can be part of the process, and you can't blame the shoer. And that's happened to me. At the last minute, I had a shoer. My regular one went somewhere. I was heading on a race to Wyoming, the Bighorn 100-mile race in Wyoming. And horse lost a shoe and had to bring in somebody I didn't know. He shot her. Well, he didn't shoe her even. And we were going down the trail, and I knew, I could tell at 50 miles, that she just didn't feel like she was going balanced. She was passing the checks, and she felt good, but I just knew it was going to catch up with her. And so I told my husband, David, and it was actually his first endurance ride, by the way, and he won.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And then after he won it, he said, "There, I won an endurance ride. Will you marry me now?"
and you couldn't say no.
And I didn't say no. I said yes. But I remember telling him at about 75 miles, and I said, when we pull into this next check, I'm going to have to pull out because I can tell she's getting sore. And it was just because of the shoeing, because he didn't have her at the right angle. And after so many miles, I mean, I forget. I'll have to go back to my research how many steps a horse takes during the course of a 50-mile ride. I think it's over 100,000 steps.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, and they're on rocks and sand and uneven ground. And, you know, they have to really know how to keep on their balance. But there was a race that my husband and I might have been running in together to see who got first place. but that was a team problem. So people need to understand, and we make it so easy to read and presentable with diagrams, that you learn about whether it's nutrition, that we have the best saddle fitting series of any magazine anywhere, and that's only because that's what everybody tells us. And really how to tell if your saddle fits your horse, and we have that in this issue as well. The shoeing one is the one that I am most proud of. Bobby put together, even Jamie Jackson wrote, Paige Toss wrote, just some really top-of-the-line people that have just have real down-to-earth knowledge and how they can express it to the people so they can take care of their own horses.
Well, it's a beautiful magazine in addition to being so informative and well-written and great, great writers that you have. And, of course, we love Bobby Joe to death. I got to get her back on the show before too long. It's been too long since she's been on. So,
how her husband won Best Condition. I'll tell you that. That was because they got married and he'd never really ever ridden a horse. They got married, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And now they have a ranch and horses and the endurance rides. And I mean, the perfect, wait long enough, you can find that perfect match. But,
I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting.
You sure? Don't give up. Don't give up.
goodness. Well, listen, let's tell people how they can find Trailblazer. It's your own Facebook, and they can visit Trailblazer Magazine there. And your website is it trailblazer.us?
Trailblazermagazine.us.
All right, trailblazermagazine.us. And and go like them on Facebook, and be sure and pick up this next issue that's coming out. And when will people be seeing that one?
Goes in the mail Friday, so they'll be seeing it in their mailbox next week. But if you subscribe this week, you can still get on the mailing list if you subscribe by Friday for this issue.
That's great.
It's one of the cover. Everything about it is just, I think it's really one of the best issues we've ever done. But I always say that the best issue we will ever do is really the next one. So we care so much. We have so much passion in our staff and so much creativity that I don't think we've ever put out a bad magazine.
I don't think so, and it's kind of great to look forward to getting your next issue of Trailblazer. So, you are always such a joy. We're going to have to schedule a show where we just have you on sometime, so we can just talk. And
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I would love that. I would love that. I've got some great funny stories I'll have to tell you.
Well, I want to hear some more of these tales. I mean, you know, we know about the Grand Canyon. We know a little bit about the skydiving. So we're just going to have a show where we just talk with you about something. So
any time
would be a good time for that. So listen, thanks for joining us. You've made us all jealous of the California weather while we're sitting out here in the southeast freezing. So anyway, talk with you soon.
Keep your heart warm and a smile on your face and the cold won't bother you.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. And hey, have a very happy Thanksgiving, okay?
You too. Both of you have a very blessed Thanksgiving.
All right, thank
you
very much.
You too,
Susanna. All right.
Bye-bye. All right.
Bye-bye. All right. Always fun to talk to Susanna. We're going to be taking a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Sean Gannon, who is the owner of French Broad Outpost Ranch in East Tennessee. And we remind you that you're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America, heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net. Kristen Harris, and we want to congratulate Kristen. She was just named the Western Music Association's Female Performer of the Year. So Kristen's a great young lady, and congratulations to her. Well, I'm in a cowboy up mood now. So we're heading up to East Tennessee, and we're going to be visiting the French Broad Outpost Ranch. And Sean Gannon, welcome to the show.
Hey there, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well,
hi, Sean.
Glad to...
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. Glad to have you on.
Glad to have you. Hey, tell everybody where Del Rio, Tennessee is, first of all, so they'll know where to find you.
Well, it's not in Texas, as some people think, but it's an hour east of Knoxville, Tennessee. It's an hour northwest of Asheville, North Carolina. So we're just about on the Tennessee border with North Carolina. We're about 6 miles away from there in the Cherokee National Forest, which is above I-40 and above the national park, the Smoky National Park.
So you're right there in the beautiful Great Smoky Mountains. So that's one of the most visited parks, national parks, in the country.
That's correct. Yeah. We're about 10 miles above the border. We're in the foothills of the Smokies is what it's called. Back in the day, all of this area was called the Smokies, but when they made the park, they took that name for themselves. So everybody around there now calls themselves the foothills of the Smokies.
Okay. Well, foothills are a good place to ride, aren't they?
I think so. They're you got good views even from where I live at.
All right, that's great. Well, tell us a little bit, Sean, about how you got started with French Broad Outpost Ranch.
Well, I didn't get my first horse until I was 28, which was in 1988. And for 5 more years, we lived in Georgia, and we got into the breeding business. So we got a lot of horses on 11 acres. We had 14 on 11 acres. And during that last recession, not this big one, but the one before in like 1991, we decided to do something with the horses. So we sold out in Georgia and moved up here to Tennessee because the land was reasonable. And so I came up here basically with a vision to open up a campground and a stable, which I did in 1993. By the time we speed up to the year 2001, we had decided to try to become a dude ranch, and that's what we are now.
Well, now tell us what the difference is between a dude ranch and a guest ranch.
Well, it's a personal, probably, opinion as to what the difference is. I like to think of it as, if I'm going to a guest ranch, I'm going to basically be hands-off. That means I'm going to mount the horse and unmount them and get served food and stay in a nice room and stuff like that and do cowboy things, you know, while I'm there. A dude ranch, to me, is where you're going to get your hands on the horse, which means, like here, we train people to groom and saddle their own horse that they've been assigned to where they have some interaction with the horse. It's great for both parts of the horse people, one being I've never hardly ever ridden and never been around horses at all, so they get a groundbreaking kind of training to where they can understand what they're doing with a 1,000-pound animal. And then the more experienced rider that comes in, they don't have to feel like, well, I don't get to do nothing but ride. They actually get to do some of the same stuff they would have done if they would have, you know, trailered up their horse and went somewhere.
Okay, all right. And Tina May, are you on the line with us?
Stuff.
Tina May, I saw two lines pop up on there, so you may have drifted away on one of those lines.
I did. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. This is a commercial, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes, I'm having technical difficulties.
Yeah, all right. Well, I know that
either
you
that or I put her to sleep.
Well, you got to give her another 5 minutes. 5 minutes more and she'll be gone. So
I'm going to have to bump myself up a little bit, make sure I don't get too boring.
No, you're goodness. Great. Well, I read about a little old western town that you kind of have there. So tell us a little bit more about your facilities that you have there at the French Broad Outpost Ranch.
Well, when we decided we wanted to become a dude ranch, we went to the bank, of course, as, you know, how you do anything when you want to start something. And they said, well, boy, we can loan you this much money. And it wasn't enough money to build like a big-time lodge. So I was going to build like a barn structure, make it into a lodge. But then some other people kind of that I knew got involved and said, hey, we want to help you a little bit here. So the guy that was going to build the barn said, well, you have enough money now, I can build you a western town. I said, okay, that's it. That'll make me different, because there are a couple other ranches in the southeast. And I said to myself, well, they don't even look like a ranch at all as far as like an old western ranch. So if I look like an old western town, that'll be kind of neat. I'll be different. So we built 4 rooms that kind of have the facades at the top. And, you know, they've got names and stuff like that. And then we tried to make the lodge look old western. And so when we finally got around to building the hotel in 2006, we made that into – basically, I other than the electrical outlets and the lights, a movie company could come in and shoot a Western inside that hotel. That it looks like John Wayne should be standing there. That's kind of what we built. We wanted people to experience, you know, the 1880s was our goal. Try to reach way back into time and kind of feel like they stepped back into time.
Oh,
we still have
neat.
Flush toilets and electricity, but, you know, at least it feels like you're more in the 1880s.
We don't have to find a bush like we were talking about for the endurance riding, so that's a good thing.
Unless there's a tree across the trail, then we may have to backtrack and use the bushes.
Okay.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about your trails that you have there and your surrounding area of trails.
Well, I've got our trails are all on our own property, so that gives us one advantage over a lot of state parks. And if a state park or state forest or national park has a view, it's often because some weather damage created it, where a storm came through and knocked down enough trees where you can see out, at least in the east. Now, out in the west, of course, they don't have that many trees up a certain level, but out here we're full of trees. So our trails, since they're ours, we were able to, when I built them, to make sure there was places where you can see out. And I also have one trail called the Gold Trail. It's our two-hour trail. It's the longest one that we actually offer. That does have some biological damage. There was a fire on the mountain, so when it wiped out the trees on the very top of that trail, you can now see, you know, just forever, it seems like. I'd say you can see at least 75 miles when you get to the very top peak there.
So there's a lot of incline.
Well, we have inclines, yeah. I wouldn't say we probably don't have anything over 10% probably, and only once or twice. Usually because I'm building it myself, I try to lay it out to where we're going gently up or gently down. But if we have to get up, there might be those little steeper spots up and down once or twice just to kind of get us around a natural object like a, you know, some great big rock or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead. You're fine.
Our trails, too, are different than most trails in this one respect. Most of the trails that you go on, unless they're old roads, are basically 18 to 24 inches wide. All of my trails are 6 to 8 feet wide because I built them with a machine. I didn't have enough manpower to go out there with shovels and stuff and do it that way, so I built it more like what you might be called a logging road, so to speak.
Okay. Oh, so you can even ride side-by-side up some of them trails.
You could, and you can also take a 4x4 back there in case you need to clear a trail, so all of that kind of comes into a handy thing.
Mm-hmm. What about, you're kind of close to some other areas where you can travel with your horse. You're pretty close to some other places, am I correct? If somebody
wants to. Yes, I'm surrounded by National Forest, so even from my location, you could go into the parts of the National Forest. You know, if let's say you had your own horse, you can go into the parts of the National Forest that allow that, because there are some non-horse places. I'm also near the Tennessee State Park called Martha Sundquist State Park. That has trails and stuff where you can take your horse there and ride. And there's two or three National Forest areas that are designated as horse-friendly places where you can actually park there and get out and ride along the trails and come back and get back in.
Mm-hmm. But for your facility, you're pretty much like an all-inclusive. You've got the food,
yes,
you've got the
correct.
Horses, you have everything there. And then if other people may have wanted to come there and there's other attractions in your area.
Right. I'm an hour from, like, Asheville, North Carolina, which has the Biltmore Estate. I'm an hour from Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge, which is kind of like New York City in the mountains with everything you could possibly want, including traffic jams. That's available, too, in case someone, you know, likes to visit that kind of area. Most of the time when people come, at least to our ranch, they hardly ever get in their car and do anything. They just stay. Occasionally you'll get somebody that wants to go drive off, you know, and see a site. But we supply usually so much of an itinerary full of activities that their week or 3 or 4 days, however long they stay, it pretty much flies by for them.
Hey, Sean, we want to find out a little bit more about some of those activities that you have there at your facility. And then for folks that may be traveling around, we want to find out about some of the exciting things that are close by if they want to come and spend a week with you, too. But right now we're going to take a very quick break. And, you know, I'm just getting my cowboy up thinking about French Broad Outpost Ranch. And so we're going to take a quick break. And, Sean, let me ask you, have you done your Christmas shopping yet?
No, I haven't even started.
Well, I've got to tell you, one of the best places to shop is at EquestrianLegacy.net in our Christmas shop. And we have a variety of vendors. You can get everything from music to saddles to pretty much anything for the horse lover in your family, and that's in the Christmas shop at EquestrianLegacy.net. And so be sure and visit there and support the sponsors that make Equestrian Legacy Radio possible. But we're going to take a break now and listen to one called He's a Cowboy, because I really have my cowboy up talking about French Broad. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Equestrian Legacy Radio's Saddle Up America.
A 1, 2, 1.
He's a cowboy, herding cows, boy. He's riding rope and wrangling on the range. He's a cowboy son. He loves this life, he's never gonna change. He rides the trail of the lonesome pine, a spirit sore and free. He hums a tune to the coyote's whine, a prairie melody. Cowboy, a real top hand, chasing tumbleweeds across the sand. He's a cowboy, a cattleman, punching cows forever, ain't it grand? Coyote's whine, a prairie melody. He's a cowboy, a real top hand, chasing tumbleweeds across the sand. He's a cowboy, a cattleman, punching cows forever, ain't it grand? Chasing tumbleweeds across the sand.
He's a cowboy, and that's the Sisters of the Silver Sage. And, Sean, did you know these gals are back up in your part of the country?
Yes, I do. I had talked to them back when I had a cowboy gathering, and they were going to come, but they had a previous engagement. So I had two of your favorites, though, Belinda Gale and Michael Martin Murphy, come to that cowboy gathering right here in Del Rio.
Yeah, well, Belinda was telling me about that, and talking about what a great facility that you have up there. And talk to us a little bit more about the facility, because you've got the lodging there, you've got a restaurant that's on site that's open for your guests, and some different events that you have, some different activities that you have there. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, we've got 11 rooms. Four of them are called lodge rooms, and seven of them are called the hotel rooms. We've got on the bottom floor of the hotel is called the saloon. That's got all the card playing tables in it. We also move all those tables out when we do the square dance, because we need some room to kick up our heels occasionally. The rooms are rustic in nature. Each room has its own bathroom, and it's got its basic service each day, like most dude ranches have, where they come in and they tidy up your room each day that you're there and change out towels. our restaurant is the Whistle Stop Cafe, and we serve three meals a day to everybody that stays with us, except for their arrival meal and departure meal. So they get breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it's pretty much Southern cooking, kind of like if you sat down maybe at a Cracker Barrel, kind of is what the food
is
that we serve.
Tina May's on her way. She loves that food, I'm telling you.
You bet.
Okay.
That sounds yummy.
I'll make a space for it. So when people come, you know, they check into their rooms. They get, you know, kind of settled in. They come to eat supper. You know, after supper, we'll do an orientation with them and an interview to make sure we give them the right horse the next day. And some of the activities they'll do that week is the basic trail rides. And when I say that, that means where we lead people with guides. We usually will take up to 10 people with a guide in the front and a guide in the drag or the back. And usually we take 30 people, like in the summer, so there might be three strings of 10 guests. And some of the other stuff they'll get to do is we do some short cattle drives. They're about 3/5 of a mile long.
Wow.
And that may not sound like that long to someone that's ridden a lot, but for most of my folks, you know, they've ridden maybe less than 20 times. So to them, that's a pretty big move, you know, pushing cattle for, you know, a little over a half a mile.
Right.
So, because that's more of a freedom movement. That when novice riders are riding, they feel a little bit more comfortable nose to tail because there's some security in that. When they have to move around in an area on a cattle drive, suddenly they're trying to figure out which is their right hand, which is their left hand, you know, which how to steer the horse, how to trot if they need to, and all those things come into play. Once we get the cows up to the lodge area, we do team penning after supper on two of the nights.
Oh,
and that's
cool.
Basically the rodeo cowboy game, except we don't play quite by the rules. You know, the big guys, they get the three horses that they have to get. Not the three horses, I'm sorry, I'm thinking backwards. I'm not a cow. But they have to get their three cows, you know, cut out of the herd and run into the box. We play a little bit simpler since we have, well, mostly beginner riders. We play, let's get a cow in the box, and then we'll go back and get another one. So that's kind of how we play that game. It's similar, but not as technically perfect.
Right.
We also have a couple raft trips that people can go on. One is a beginning whitewater raft trip where a 5-year-old and up can go on it. And then on Saturdays, we take people to the Big Pigeon where you have to be 8 years old and older to go on that. And that's got class 3s and 4s, so it's much more vigorous. We have a Wednesday night ride for the all-weekers. We call that the supper ride. They get ready at 5 o'clock. They saddle up their horses. We ride up the mountain. They eat their meal up there, and then they ride back down at the dusk time when it's the sun's starting to set down. So that's kind of a fun ride, folks. Then on Friday nights, we do a square dance, and on Saturday nights, we bring in a bluegrass band. On Fridays, we have a little kids' rodeo, you know, so kids can kind of pretend like they're kind of a cowboy. We don't let the adults do it because they get too competitive. You know, they want to get out there and try to race as fast as possible, and they've ridden like, you know, 6 times their whole life. So you have to kind of be careful with the adults. The kids you can kind of lead around just a little bit. So that's a pretty good nutshell of what we offer and what we give people while they're here.
Well, that's pretty cool. And then again, you're only about an hour from the Biltmore in Asheville, and about an hour from Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. I know this is kind of peak season that we're coming into for both of those locations. And so if you have people that are traveling in to come and visit your facility, it's close enough that they could do an excursion and go visit in some of those areas. So
That's correct.
Yeah,
they've,
I know.
Both places have Christmas light time periods. Biltmore and Gatlinburg are pretty much close. They start around Thanksgiving or right around the middle of November, depending on what's going on, and they go to towards the end of January. So either place you can go see Christmas lights, and depending on what you want to see, whether you would go to Gatlinburg or Biltmore, it just depends on what you're really looking for.
Okay, all right. And you have some special offers, too, available for folks at this time of the year, don't you?
Yeah, we're always running specials these days. Yeah, the economy is still kind of struggling on its way back. So, you know, we've learned that, you know, specials help everybody get a chance to kind of go out and grab something that they didn't think they could get maybe. And so we've always got some percentage off of our regular rate. Like Christmas right now, we've got 35% off. And Thanksgiving, which we can only take a few more people because we're almost full, there's 25% off for that. So, you know, we're always offering discounts for folks because we want people to experience this vacation. It's really, in my opinion, I guess, but maybe not. The surveys say the same thing. The Dude Ranch vacation, if it's done right, which we believe we do it right, like the ones, not all of them, but most of them out west, it's the one vacation that kids especially will never forget. And it's really, in my personal opinion, the last family vacation that's offered to anybody. Because even if you go on a cruise, you have to kind of keep track of your kids a lot because there's 5,000 people on that ship. You know, if you go to Disney, you know, there might be, I don't know how many they hold. I mean, it could be 10,000 people in there on any given day. So you still got to watch your kids. At a Dude Ranch, you can kind of say, oh, there they are. And then you can go back to doing what you want to do if you're taking a nap on the porch or something, because they're right out front playing with the horses or they're playing out in the grass. And it's a safe, kind of nice vacation for families. One of the other things that happens at most ranches is we're usually in an unplugged area, which we are too. We have very little cell phone reception, just a little bit of Verizon, I think. Not to give them a plug, but they're the ones that work. But kids actually, instead of texting their parents next to them, they actually turn around and say, "Hey, Dad, you want to go on this ride with me?" So it's getting back to the old days even in that way, to where you're actually looking at one another saying, "Hey, let's go on a ride," instead of texting them that you're fixing to go out with your friends and not see them for 8 hours.
Right.
So when
it's kind of
a nice table,
thing.
They actually talk to each other and they converse.
Yes,
and
yes,
have
we serve our
contact.
Meals family style. Yep, family
That's
style.
Right.
So everybody sits down at the same time. If we have 30 people, we've also got, you know, 6 or 8 wranglers, so they're going to sit with the folks while they eat so they can talk horses and anything else they want to talk about. And so it's a great thing. You come in a stranger, and within, if you're here all week, by even Tuesday, you can see people start to withdraw from the world and start to make their world right inside the dining room. So it goes beyond my description. You'd almost have to experience it yourself. Unfortunately for me, I didn't even know what a Dude Ranch was until the year 2000. So I was a really late comer to what this kind of place can offer.
Like it's a great way for a family to spend some time together and have quality time together.
I'd say it's the best kind of place.
And you've got lots of fun-filled weeks.
Yes, it's the best kind of place. If you look at the surveys, Dude Ranch is their number one as far as we remember that vacation. You know, sure, you remember Mickey Mouse and stuff, but you can't remember what year you went. It's just so full of action and all that stuff that... But you remember your wrangler, you remember your horse. You know, it's a neat thing. I wish more people could kind of think about taking one. A lot of people are afraid to take one. First problem they have is they go, I don't know how to ride a horse, or I've ridden a horse and I fell off, or I've ridden a horse and they took off with me, or I rode a horse and I didn't feel like I was very much in balance. All those things keep people from doing this sport or this industry, and that's something I wish we could kind of reverse and get some people coming back to this industry that are worried about those kind of things.
Right. Well, you know, one of the recommendations that was given on your facility came from our good friend Belinda Gale, and she said not only is it a beautiful facility, but she said, you know, just really, really fine people. And so that's kind of important when you're planning a vacation to go somewhere that you can enjoy yourself, but you're dealing with great folks. And, Sean, let's tell people where they can find you to get in touch with you.
Well, I'm in Del Rio, Tennessee. On the web, I can be found at www.FrenchBroadDudeRanch.com. That's our new site. It got built this year. The old site is FrenchBroadRiver.com, but it still bounces to the new one.
Okay.
I'm not sure else how they would find us. The web is basically where everybody finds me, unless it's word of mouth.
Right, right. Well, and you've got a Facebook page as well. You know,
yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. I'm not up to speed on all the important things in the world, but
a few billion people on Facebook, so that's a pretty easy spot to find. Well, yeah. So, we want to encourage folks to visit the website, visit and like them on Facebook if you're on Facebook, and again, easy to get to. Halfway between Knoxville and Asheville, just off of I-40, and beautiful, beautiful country. And I'm going to have to make a trip up to East Tennessee myself to visit with you.
Well, just let me know when you want to come. We'll roll out the red dust and we'll let you ride through it.
Oh gosh, well that sounds like a great trip. So I'll plan on doing that. And Tina May, any final thoughts? Any questions that you wanted to ask?
No,
John?
It's another add to my bucket list. I'm looking forward to meeting Sean and visiting his place. And Sean, I want to thank you for being a guest on our show.
Well, I certainly appreciate you guys allowing me to come on.
Well, we look forward
Absolutely.
To talking with you again. You know, a lot of people love to get out and experience new parts of the country, and it's not always convenient to haul your horse and your trailer somewhere. So easy to get into to your facility and see different part of the country. Enjoy your great trails and your great hospitality, and visit the great Smoky Mountains or the foothills.
Correct. And we have lots of folks that come that do own their own horses. They just don't want to try to trailer them anymore, so they look for places to ride that everything's supplied for them.
Right. And I think you told me the other day that you had a lot of people that came from out of the country and spent time with you, too.
I get people from all over the world. I get more people from around the world than I do from Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm too close to them, I think. So I get more people from far away than I do real close.
All right. Well, we hope that our listeners that are out of the country will visit your website, visit your Facebook page, and put you on their bucket list. And Sean, thanks again for taking the time to be with us. Appreciate you, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Talk
Thank
with you
Sean.
Soon. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Tina May, sounds like you got construction going on at your house. So,
I do. I have got construction going on. It's loud, and apparently they disconnected my internet service, and it's just been very entertaining here at my house.
It's been kind of a challenging show for you, but have you had a good time?
I've had a really good time, and I've got to apologize to our listeners.
Well, they never knew, really, so I had to tell on you there. Hey, listen, we've had a good show. Always enjoy talking with Susanna Gibson with Trailblazer Magazine. Be sure and pick up and subscribe to Trailblazer. A lot of information there, and great, beautiful magazine. A lot of their writers are our friends and have been on our shows, so we'd encourage you to do that. And put French Broad Outpost Ranch on your bucket list and get up into the Great Smoky Mountains. A lot to see and do there at the facility itself, and you're close enough to some of the big tourist attractions like the Biltmore and like Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge that you can just spend a week, make that your headquarters, and see what we've got to offer in the Carolinas and in the state of Tennessee. Who have we got coming up next week on the show?
Next week, we are having Tales from the Trail with John Tanner from Utah. Then we travel to Eminence, Missouri, and talk with Caroline Dyer from Cross Country Trail Ride.
All right. So we'll be visiting in Missouri, and John Tanner's out in Utah, and maybe we can get John to talk to us about his experience in his boxer shorts one sub-freezing night out there. That's a pretty interesting story talking with John. So he's a lot of fun, so that should be a fun show. Next Tuesday on Saddle Up America. Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale this Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. I believe that the Female Performer of the Year with the Western Music Association is going to be Belinda's guest, and that's Miss Kristen Harris. So that will be a great show. And then tomorrow, we've mentioned already, we'll be celebrating the 21st Cowboy Christmas Tour with Michael Martin Murphy, and find out about the history of the cowboy Christmas ball that started back in the 1800s in Anson, Texas. So a lot of fun. It's the holiday season, and people will be making their plans for Thanksgiving right away. And again, if you haven't done your Christmas shopping, be sure and visit the Christmas shop at EquestrianLegacy.net and shop with our great sponsors there as well. So thanks for listening today, and we remind you, as always, if you climb in the saddle,
get ready for the ride.
Get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Thanks for listening.
Way out in West Texas, where the Clear Fork waters flow, where the cattle are a-browsing and them Spanish ponies grow, where the northers come a-whistling and the old dust devils roll, and the prairie dogs are sneezing and freezing from the cold, where the lonesome tawny prairies melt into the airy streams, and the double mountains slumber in the heavenly kind of dreams, where the antelope are grazing and the lonesome plovers call. It was there that I attended the cowboy Christmas ball. The music was a fiddle and a lively tambourine, and a big bass violin imported by stage from Abilene. Now the room was togged out gorgeous with mistletoe and shawls, and the candles flickered frescoes all around them merry walls.
Where the women folk looked lonely and the boys looked kind of sweet, till the leader commenced to yell out,
"Hey boys, let's all stampede!"
And the music started sighing and a wailing through the hall. It's a kind of introduction to the cowboy Christmas ball.
The leader was a feller that come from Swenson's ranch.
Yep, they called him Windy Bill, from Little Dead Man's Branch.
When he commenced to holler,
"Now fellas, stake your pens, lock horns with all them heifers,
and wrestle them just like men."
Salute them lovely critters, now swing them and let them go, and climb the grapevine round and round, now hands all do-si-do. You mavericks join the roundup, just skip the waterfall. Boy, it was getting active at the cowboy Christmas ball. Boys were tolerable skittish, and the ladies powerful neat. That old bass violin music made us jump in with both feet. That wailing frisky fiddle I never will forget, and Windy Bill kept singing, and I believe I hear him yet.
Oh yes, boys, chase them squirrels, cut them to the side. Doc Hollis to the center, oh, now Crosby Charlie's bride. Around you, gentle kittens, now rope and balance all. Oh.
Hey, it was getting happy at the cowboy Christmas ball.
The dust rose fast and furious, and we all just galloped around,
till the scenery got so giddy that Z-Bar Dick went down. We buckled to our partners and told them to hold on, and shook our hooves like lightning until the early dawn. Don't tell me about cotillions or polkas, no siree. That whirl in Manson City, it takes the cake from me. Oh, Bill, I won't forget you, and I often will recall that lively gated soiree called the Cowboy Christmas Ball. Oh, no, I won't forget it, the Cowboy Christmas Ball.